Not only did you know Corley and Hickory, he said softly and without preamble, you knew them pretty well. She flushed and looked at him.
Not really. We were all involved in an organization called Sane Energy. They wanted to try to talk to some oil company bigwig about changing an oil pipeline, and I thought it was a good idea.
You claimed you barely knew him. She sighed and looked at him.
Okay, I knew them a little more than barely, but it's not like we were buddies or something, and I didn't want to get involved because what if that made me a target? I don't know who killed them or why, I swear.
Okay, let's leave that for now and talk about the fact that you talked to Albion Corley on the journey the day of the reenactment, and then you rushed to talk with Jonathan Moreau. Why did you need to talk to Jonathan, if not to tell him what you must have known, that Albion and Farrell wanted his help with their plan? Jenny shook her head.
Yes, that's why I wanted to talk to him, but I didn't get the chance to tell him anything. Someone was talking to him, asking him questions. People are always asking him questions. He left to set up his next lecture before I got a chance to talk to him.
Ethan had to be satisfied with that because Brad and Charlie had stopped talking and were heading his way.
Done for the day, Brad said happily. We should all head to the cafe.
Ethan looked at his watch, surprised to see that it was already mid-afternoon, and they'd promised Daru a visit to the church.
Can't. Charlie has a show at 5:30, he said.
Well, that sucks,
Brad said.
How about breakfast tomorrow? Mike asked, walking up to join them. The journey stays important till mid-morning. We could do an early breakfast, say 8-ish, maybe 8:30.
Sounds good, Ethan said.
Sure,
Charlie agreed.
Still wish you could come with us now, Brad said.
Me too, but we'll see you in the morning,
Charlie promised.
Okay then, Brad said. Come on, Jenny, let's go.
Jenny looked toward the church again, and Ethan followed her gaze. Jonathan and his group were gone. Damn, he'd wanted to observe the man more closely while they were so near where Hickory's body had been buried. Ethan and Charlie waited until the others were trekking back to their cars. Then he turned to Captain Daru, who had been waiting quietly, and said,
Let's head over to the church. So many lives,
Daru said quietly, looking off toward the graveyard. Ethan took Charlie's hand. He squeezed it as they followed Daru toward the church. They were almost there when they saw Anson. He materialized right in front of them, but he didn't even seem to notice Ethan and Charlie, only the ghost who was with them.
Els?
He said in shock.
Anson.
The two ghosts embraced warmly, and then they walked away and sat on an above-ground tomb, where they rested and talked. Ethan knew he had to get Charlie back to the journey, but there was no reason not to leave the two cousins there to catch up. Daru had plenty of time to find his own way back.
Charlie and I are going to head back to the ship, he called.
Anson McKee looked toward them for a moment, then lifted a hand and waved goodbye. Ellsworth smiled and did the same. Ethan and Charlie turned and headed toward their rental car.
That was beautiful,
Charlie said.
I always figured ghosts could find each other if they wanted to, but apparently I was wrong. I guess we'll never know all the answers, even if we do have the sight. Not until we die ourselves, anyway.
In that case, I hope I stay ignorant for a long time,
Charlie said with a smile. At the car, Ethan glanced at his watch. He was barely going to get Charlie back in time for her first performance.
Don't forget, I still have to change,
she said, checking the time herself.
I'll get you there.
He drove to the dock, aware of the time the whole way. When he reached the dock and the spot where he was supposed to leave the car, Charlie asked,
Do you really think a 90-pound woman could be our killer?
What?
Jenny, I saw you talking to her. and from the look on her face, you weren't making casual conversation. You were questioning her, weren't you?
I was asking her about sane energy.
Oh?
She admitted she knew Albion and Farrell better than she'd admitted before. Said she was a member of sane energy, too. She did know that they wanted to set up a meeting with Gideon Oil.
That was the end of the conversation, because they had to produce their ship ID card so they could board. Charlie was ready to run ahead without him, but he insisted on going with her.
I'm gonna check on the others, but I'll be back over to walk you up to the dining room.
Just hurry, because I'm running late.
Okay, okay. Just be sure to lock the door.
Locking,
she called. Ethan walked the two steps to Jude and Alexi's cabin, though he suspected they'd already gone up to the Eagle View. He had just raised his fist to knock on their door when he heard a startled scream from his own cabin. Charlie. 15. Charlie stood still, staring in horror at the mirror above the sink. You're next. The words seemed to drip down the glass, and they looked like they were written in blood, but they couldn't have been, could they? Charlie backed away from the mirror. She didn't even realize she had screamed until Ethan burst into the cabin and raced up behind her. It was lipstick, just lipstick, she thought, and tried to reassure herself that this was a sick prank. She felt Ethan's hands on her shoulders, firm and reassuring.
Lipstick, he said. Don't touch it. I'll get hold of Randy and have him send a forensics team. We may find something, fingerprints or something.
Is this a joke? The printing looks like a kid's, and the message, it's like something from half the cheesy horror movies out there, but how did someone get into our cabin?
We'll worry about that later, Ethan said. Maybe someone borrowed a master key from one of the maids. But joke or not, people are dead and this isn't funny. Find your things and we'll get you into one of the other cabins. You can change there while I wait for forensics to show up. The journey doesn't leave St. Francisville until tomorrow morning, so we have plenty of time to get a handle on this.
Okay,
Charlie said. She turned and hurried to the closet, collecting her dress, shoes, corset, and petticoat. She felt cold, as if she was moving like a robot. But she was calm. No, she realized, she was too calm. She was almost numb. Paradoxically, she was also angry. How dare some sicko sneak into her cabin and try to scare her this way? She didn't think she'd be able to sleep in here again. Yet, where could she go? She was pretty sure the ship was at capacity. Once she was ready to leave, she noticed that Ethan was just hanging up the phone, and when he took her arm and led her out, Jude was already out in the hallway and waiting for them next door. Alexi was peeking out the doorway as Ethan tersely explained the situation to Jude.
Might suggest we've been wrong and someone on the ship is our killer, Jude said.
It might, but the ship has been at the dock in St. Francisville all day, too, Ethan said. Someone could have sneaked aboard.
I'll step out so you can go in and change,
Jude said to Charlie, nodding toward the pile of clothing in her arms.
Thanks,
she said. As soon as she closed the door, Alexi looked at Charlie questioningly.
There was a message on the mirror, written in lipstick, Charlie explained. It said, you're next.
Alexi shook her head.
Something similar happened on the Destiny. My guess is it means someone thinks you're getting close. Why would they think I'm getting close?
Charlie asked. Alexi looked at her grimly.
Because even though you don't realize it yet, you must know the killer,
she said quietly.
And that scares him, or her,
she added.
You think a woman could have done this?
Wielded an Enfield with a bayonet attached? Charlie said, slipping out of her clothes and into her costume. She turned so Alexi could tighten the corset.
Jenny McPherson's name keeps popping up, but she's about the size of a mouse. She might not have done the killing herself. There could be two or even more people involved,
Alexi told her.
Women are willing to do strange things for the men they love, and vice versa, of course. Including kill. Maybe,
Alexei murmured. There was a tap at the door, and after checking through the peephole, Alexei opened it to let Clara in. The most effusive of their group, she threw her arms around Charlie.
You okay?
She asked. Charlie nodded.
Oddly enough, though I admit I'm scared, I'm angry too. Good. Angry is good,
Clara said firmly.
Anyway, you guys ready to go? Jude is going to walk us to the dining room and stay with us. Ethan and Thor are going to wait for the forensics team and talk to Laurent when he gets here.
It's a plan,
Charlie murmured. They headed out to the hall where the three crew agents waited.
Showtime,
Alexei said. You going to be okay? Ethan asked Charlie. Alexei and Clara could go on without you.
Don't be silly, I'm fine. And hopefully Captain DeRue will be back, and his men are there. One of them might even have seen something. Besides, I'm not afraid of lipstick on a mirror.
Ethan smiled at her, a smile that was grim but admiring. She wished she deserved his admiration, but she really hadn't done anything other than not fall apart completely. I'll have a new cabin settled by the time you're finished with the second show, he promised. As they walked down the hall, Charlie looked at her companions.
How hard would it have been for someone to have gotten on the ship?
She asked.
I mean, someone who isn't supposed to be here?
Well, security's not as tight as when you're traveling internationally,
Jude said from where he was walking a few feet behind them.
Tight?
Clara gave what sounded almost like an unladylike snort.
They allow prospective cruisers on during the day. They supposedly scan IDs, but the procedure's pretty casual. I was down on the promenade deck the other day with Thor, and we could see how easy it was to come aboard. Of course, there's supposed to be a count at the end of the day and make sure everyone who got on is off, but...
Charlie lowered her voice.
So it's conceivable someone from St. Francisville got on the journey sometime during the day and went to my cabin to write that message?
Just about anything is conceivable,
Alexei said.
In this case, I'd say it goes beyond conceivable to quite possible,
Clara added.
And it's not like they had to smuggle a weapon on. We're talking about a lipstick. No one would look twice.
She slipped her arm around Charlie's shoulders.
But you've got nothing to worry about. You have us. All of us,
Alexei added. Charlie smiled, thinking about the friends who had just vowed to protect her. A piano bar hostess and a soprano with the voice of an angel. Not exactly a couple of Navy SEALs. But she knew both of them had survived terrible ordeals to be where they were now. And even if they weren't gun-toting bodyguards themselves, they came with a pair of them. And then there was Ethan, of course. Her skin flushed at the thought of him.
I'm tired of everything pointing at my father, who would certainly never hurt me, or anyone else for that matter. I'm angry, and I want to shake someone to get to the truth,
Charlie said as they reached the dining room. As soon as they entered, she saw that Captain DeRue and his men were there. Every single one of them, from those who could stand to those who were too weak to rise from their sick beds, saluted the four of them. For a moment, they all stood dead still. This was worth it. Whatever happened to her here aboard the journey, this was worth it. They saluted in return, then headed to the small stage to warm up. Soon the diners began to file in. Charlie watched for Ethan and Thor, but they didn't appear. Neither did her father. Captain DeRue was in front of the stage as they ended, watching as if mesmerized, applauding enthusiastically. As the diners headed out to allow the room to be set up for the second seating, he approached Charlie, looking clearly concerned.
You're all right?
He inquired anxiously.
Yes, thank you. Some of my men say they saw some of the same people on board today who were here the day of the reenactment. The petite woman was one.
Jenny?
Jenny McPherson, the makeup artist you saw on set today?
Early. Very early,
the captain said.
The others a bit later. There were three of them, and they went in different directions.
Charlie nodded, glancing around. A robust woman in a long blue gown had cornered Alexi and Clara. Jude was on his phone. She looked down as she spoke, trying to make sure, if she was being observed, that it didn't look like she was talking to herself.
Captain, someone wrote a threat on the mirror in my cabin. They used lipstick so it would look like blood.
He looked at her gravely.
We're afraid for you. Me, my men, and Anson, too. He believes the killer may think you found the body of Farrell Hickory because you'd seen something that indicated where to look. Perhaps that you've even seen the murderer himself.
But I didn't see anything. I couldn't have seen anything. The evidence shows he was killed the night before I found him,
Charlie said.
Perhaps the killer thinks you know something else then. It doesn't matter. You must be careful. Please, be very careful.
Charlie nodded solemnly.
I will be. Thank you.
He had faded away before she finished speaking, leaving her talking to the air.
Charlie?
She turned to see Alexi, looking at her worriedly, and walked over to lean on the piano so she could tell her about the captain's warning and what the men had seen.
Wasn't Jenny on set today?
Alexi asked her.
She was, but he said it was very early, so it could have been before she had to be on set. Do you think she wrote on my mirror?
Ethan and I did go up top for breakfast,
Charlie said.
I just can't see her having the strength to kill the men the way they were killed.
Maybe she didn't kill them, but did write on your mirror,
Alexi suggested. Clara moved over to the piano to join them. Jude was still on the phone, but he was watching them as he talked.
I'm thinking about spending the night at my dad's house in St. Francisville,
Charlie said after they'd brought Clara up to speed.
I don't want to be in that cabin again. I don't know why, because I'm not actually afraid when I'm with Ethan, but I just feel it has been touched by something dirty, something evil. Silly, huh?
We can switch cabins,
Alexi offered.
That's too much trouble, just because I'm being ridiculous. It's only about 10 minutes from the ship to my house, and the journey doesn't leave port until 10:30. I don't think Ethan will mind if we stay at the house tonight.
He won't mind doing anything that makes you feel safe.
Jude walked over to the piano, pocketing his phone.
Ethan and Thor have gone down to the station with Randy Laurent. They're going to enhance some of the ship's video surveillance footage and try to find out who might have been on the ship. I'm not sure when they'll be back.
Charlie doesn't want to sleep in her cabin tonight,
Alexi told him.
Charlie and Ethan can have our cabin,
Jude said.
I already offered, but Charlie doesn't want to put us out,
Alexi said.
I kind of want to get off the ship tonight,
Charlie said.
Do we know how long Ethan and Thor are going to be?
Clara asked.
We could all go to Charlie's house and wait for him. Even I'll spend the night there. Ethan and Thor could just meet us there whenever they finished.
After your second set, we'll figure out what to do,
Jude said.
Have you seen my dad?
Charlie asked him.
No, he hasn't come in here,
Jude said.
Would you see if you can find him?
Charlie asked.
I'm worried about him. He's always here for our shows.
I'll send someone,
Jude assured her.
You could just run down to his cabin,
Charlie said.
Not on your life. No way am I leaving the three of you,
Jude told her firmly.
I'm sure your dad is okay, but I will send someone. Meanwhile, I think your next set of people are coming in.
Jude smiled and walked over to the table where he planned to sit for the second show. Several diners approached the Bells before sitting down to ask them to reprise one song or another from a previous night. Finally, everyone was seated, and the trio launched into their opening medley, after which Charlie began the story of the journey and how she'd changed hands several times between North and South.
"And now she's an Irish-American ship,"
Clara piped in, which got a laugh. Once everyone settled down, Alexi began to play softly as Charlie talked. As she neared the end, she saw the ghosts of the men who had been on the journey the day it changed hands for the final time. As the show went on, Charlie kept looking over to where Jude was sitting. Several times he got up and moved to the doorway at the back of the room to speak on the phone. Her father had yet to appear, and she found herself growing more and more restless. When their last song was over, she dodged the fans approaching the stage to congratulate them and hurried over to Jude.
"My dad."
"Your dad is fine. He's in his cabin with the Do Not Disturb sign on the door. But I asked the steward to disturb him anyway, just to ask if he needed anything. He answered and said he was fine."
Charlie looked at Jude and shook her head.
"He's not fine. I know my dad. He would have been here tonight if you were fine. Jude, please, we have to go to his cabin."
"Okay. Get Claire and Alexi. We'll go now," Jude told her.
The four of them hurried toward the exit. It wasn't an easy escape. People kept stopping them to ask questions or just pass on a compliment. The whole time, Charlie's fear for her father was growing. Maybe it was just as irrational as not wanting to sleep in her cabin, but rational or not, it was eating away at her insides. Finally, they were out of the dining room and heading down the hallway. Charlie saw the Do Not Disturb sign on her father's door and ignored it, hurrying ahead to pound on the door. There was no answer, not even when she called,
"Dad, it's me, Charlie."
She turned back to look at Jude.
"We have to get in there."
"Do you have a key to his cabin?"
"No, but..."
"Never mind. Not if you're that worried."
Jude turned sideways and slammed his shoulder against the door, which splintered at the impact. He proceeded to kick in what was left of it. As he did, someone in the cabin screamed, high-pitched and startled. Ethan, Thor, and Randy sat head-to-head as they went over the video surveillance from the journey. They ran through it several times in real time, then had the tech speed it up and slow it down, searching through the hundreds of people who'd come and gone that day.
"I don't see a single member of the movie crew," Randy said. "No one who could have left that message on the mirror."
Ethan hadn't seen anyone either. He leaned back, puzzled. The lipstick message hadn't been a joke. It had been a serious warning. And there was no reason for anyone to go after Charlie unless they were convinced she knew or had seen something that could put them at risk, like Selma Rodriguez, who hadn't known anything at all, except that Albion Corley had planned on meeting with Jonathan Moreau.
"Ethan, it's possible someone paid someone else, maybe an employee on the journey, to write that message. The journey's old, but she's had her doors reconfigured for keycards, and keycards are the easiest thing in the world to duplicate," Thor pointed out. "Yeah, it's possible," Ethan agreed, then leaned back, perplexed. "Why do people kill?" he murmured.
"Sometimes," Randy said, "I think they kill because they're just rotten somewhere in their souls. Sometimes for hatred, or love, jealousy."
"Greed," Ethan said. "Greed's a big one.
We're meeting with Saul Gideon, CEO of Gideon Oil in Baton Rouge tomorrow. The guy isn't from Louisiana, he's a Texan, and he wasn't against meeting with the Sane Energy people. If his company made the change the Sane Energy people were going to propose, it would have cost him a great deal of money in the short term. But the meeting was never scheduled. No one even talked to Gideon about it. And we know, because HQ checked his whereabouts, that Saul Gideon didn't come here and bayonet two old friends in reproduction military uniforms."
He turned to the tech.
"Let's run the video one more time, please."
Ethan watched again and asked the tech to slow down when they hit late afternoon, right about the time the tour buses were returning to the journey.
"There,"
Ethan exclaimed.
"There where?"
Randy said, puzzled. Thor pulled his chair closer and pointed at the screen.
I see it, Ethan. Officer Johnson, run back and slow it down there. Right there. Go frame by frame.
Start with that family of three goes through the checkpoint, and then there's a lull, Ethan said. And then...
There!
Looks like a kid, but...
That's not a kid, that's a small woman, Thor said.
And I know who it is, Ethan said flatly. Jenny McPherson, who was supposedly on her way to have dinner at the cafe with a bunch of her co-workers when we last saw her. He stood up. We have to get back to the ship.
As Thor and Randy rose, there was a tap on the door. Ethan opened it to reveal an officer standing in the hall.
We've got a match on some of the prints we found in Charlene Moreau's cabin, he said.
Charlie couldn't have been more stunned to see the small blonde standing in her father's cabin than if Godzilla had been there. Jenny McPherson looked both startled and horrified. She was staring at them like a deer caught in the headlights.
What are you doing, breaking into Jonathan's suite?
She demanded, her hand fluttering to her throat.
What are we doing here? Charlie demanded. What the hell are you doing here? And where the hell is my father?
Jenny looked truly surprised.
I thought he was with you.
No, he's not with me, Charlie snapped and stepped forward aggressively. Jude caught her and pulled her back right before she could tackle the other woman.
I'm asking you one more time, where's my father? If he's not with you, I have no idea,
Jenny said.
What are you doing here? And how did you get in my cabin? Why did you write on my mirror? What are you talking about? I was never in your cabin, and I certainly didn't write anything on your mirror.
What are you doing aboard this ship?
Jude asked evenly.
We can have you arrested for breaking and entering, you know.
Breaking and entering?
Jenny gasped.
You're the one who broke the door down. I was just waiting. How did you get in here? And why were you waiting? Waiting for what, my father? Why? Were you going to stab him in the heart?
Charlie asked.
What? No.
Then why are you here? Charlie demanded.
If you've hurt my father in any way, I'll... Hurt him? Are you crazy?
Jenny protested.
Ben? Jude asked.
Oh, good Lord. Damn it, Charlie, I'm sleeping with him, Jenny said.
Charlie was actually stunned speechless for a minute. Finally, she managed to say,
What?
Jenny let out a sigh.
We didn't want to say anything to anyone yet, especially you. Your dad was worried what you would think. I mean, I'm only a few years older than you are. We're friends. I think we were friends anyway, and I hope we still are. I wanted to tell you it was ridiculous, two adults sneaking around to be together. I came aboard to see him for a few minutes. He gave me a key. He told me to come aboard as a visitor when I finished on set, then slip in and get some rest, and he'd see me when your show was over. I begged off going to the cafe with the crew and came here instead. Charlie, I swear I'm crazy about your dad.
Charlie felt sick.
He said he was going up to watch the show? Yes. He said he watched you every night. And did I mind?
Jenny told her.
I told him of course I didn't. Charlie, you're everything to him. He didn't want you hurt. And he certainly didn't want you to end up blindsided like this. He just wanted to be able to tell you in his own time.
Charlie just stared at Jenny, still stunned.
When did you last see Jonathan?
Jude asked.
Right before he gave his speech at the church. I saw him from the bluff and went over to say hi,
she said.
He said he'd join me here as soon as the show ended. I didn't know what to do when that steward showed up, so I just made my voice really deep and said I was fine. And when you showed up, I figured if I just ignored you, you'd go away. But then I started to worry. Charlie, I care about him so much.
Jenny?
And her father? But more important, where the hell was her father? She turned to Jude.
We need to call Ethan and Randy and ship security and anyone else you can think of, and I don't know what. Jude, something is wrong. I know it. We have to find my father.
Where would he go if he didn't come back to the ship?
He asked her. She shook her head.
Nowhere. Not if he said he'd be here. I know my dad. He'd be here if he could be. Something is wrong. Something is really, really wrong.
All right. I'll get you guys, except you, Jenny. You stay right here, back to our cabin, and then I'll make the calls. We'll get everyone on this, but Charlie, you have to stay there where you'll be safe. In the cabin, door locked. And you can't leave, no matter what.
Ricky Simpson had been in bed when they started pounding on his door. He'd gotten up quickly and opened it, then looked surprised to see Ethan, Thor, and Randy standing in the hall staring at him. He immediately flushed and looked uncomfortable, though he managed to ask,
Hey, what's going on? Is there a problem?
The three men pushed their way into the cabin. Sit down. Ethan told him.
Hey, you may be with the government, but I know my rights. You can't just bust in here and start pushing me around. I have my rights,
Ricky protested.
There are a dozen charges I can haul you in on,
Randy said, adding dryly,
being the local man, you know.
We know you did it.
Did what? What is this all about?
Simpson asked them. He had to know, Ethan thought, though he was still doing a good job of faking ignorance.
It's about a message. A threatening message left on Charlene Moreau's mirror, written in lipstick.
Lipstick? Has to be one of the dancers, or more likely one of the other singers. Those girls, they can get pretty jealous, and when they get jealous, they get mean.
Ricky, I think you have plenty of access to lipstick,
Randy said.
We think that message has something to do with the recent murders in the parish. And guess what?
Ethan said.
Your fingerprints popped up all over that bathroom.
What?
Ricky demanded, looking stunned.
Fingerprints, buddy? They gave you away,
Randy told him.
Well, of course they did. I've used that bathroom,
Ricky said.
You sneak into your performers' bathrooms for kicks or something?
Randy demanded.
No,
Simpson protested.
Last cruise, Mandy Drake, the country singer, was in that room. She and I are old friends. I spend lots of time with her, and not the kind of time you're probably thinking, either. We are friends. Old friends. I was one of the first people to hire, years ago.
Ethan addressed Randy.
Could the cleaning staff on the journey be that bad? They'd have to be pretty bad,
Randy said.
You can wipe down fingerprints with just about any kind of cloth, and on a mirror, with an ammonia cleaner, easy peasy.
Maybe the damn mirror wasn't dirty,
Ricky snapped.
Look, I'm the entertainment director, and...
I think he was the entertainment director,
Thor said.
Was, yeah... I'm gonna say that's the key word.
Ethan agreed.
Lawyer? I want a lawyer,
Ricky said.
I haven't charged you with anything yet,
Randy told him.
But...
Actually, no one but us knows we're here, Ricky. So I don't think you should get a lawyer. I think you should just fess up. Tell us the truth,
Thor said. Depending on your story... We might not have to go to the cruise line and tell them what you did, Ethan said.
It's your right to get a lawyer if you want one, and you don't have to say anything until you do,
Randy said to Ricky, then looked at Ethan and Thor and added,
We want this all legit and by the book if we go to court with this jerk. We don't want any evidence tossed out because we haven't followed due process. Petty mischief would be one thing, and not worth a taxpayer's money, as far as taking it to court,
Thor said.
Losing your job is bad,
Ethan said.
Going to jail?
But I didn't do anything,
Ricky protested. Ethan shrugged and looked over at Thor and Randy.
I say he's lying. Sounds like a lie to me, too,
Randy said.
I'm not lying,
Ricky protested.
Randy, you want to write up the report? Ethan asked.
We're gonna have to look deeper, involve the captain of the ship, the VP Entertainment for Celtic American, whatever it takes to get to the truth.
Now I'm afraid I'll have to take you in, Mr. Simpson,
Randy said.
Stand up, please. I don't want to hurt you putting on the cuffs. Of course, once we're down at the station, you'll be able to make a call and get your attorney,
Randy said. Ricky Simpson did exactly what they'd hoped for. He caved.
Wait, okay. I did it. Frankly, I needed the money.
The money? Ethan asked him.
Yeah, I was wandering around yesterday by the church. I listen to Jonathan Moreau whenever I can. What that man knows about history could fill the ocean. I always learn something new.
What about the money? Ethan interrupted impatiently.
Oh, well, there were a bunch of people coming and going, all in uniform, some Yankees, some Reb. I asked why, because I knew there was no reenactment yesterday. Somebody said they were all working on a movie. One of the guys came up to me. He's in the movie, same movie Charlene Moreau is the star of, I guess. Anyway, he wanted to prank her. Gave me $50 just to slip in and write the message on the mirror. I thought he was just teasing her, replaying a scene from the movie or something.
You went into someone else's cabin and wrote a threat on her mirror as a prank?
Randy asked, disbelieving.
Who was the man, the one who paid you?
Ethan asked.
I don't actually know his name, but he's in the movie, so you should be able to track him down.
What did he look like?
Ethan asked.
Like a Civil War soldier,
Ricky said. Ethan prayed for patience.
North? South? Was he young or old?
I think it was a Confederate uniform, but I'm not sure. I'm not from around here, so I don't pay much attention to all that North-South stuff. The guy was, I don't know, 20s, 30s, maybe even early 40s. He had so much beard, who the hell could tell?
If you saw pictures, could you recognize him?
Ethan asked.
Sure, maybe. Like I said, man, he had a lot of hair on his face.
Okay, where's the money? You still have the money?
Ethan asked. He glanced over at Randy. It might be a long shot, trying to get prints off the money, but it was possible.
The money?
Ricky said blankly.
The $50, the money you were paid,
Ethan said, trying to contain his irritation.
Oh, well, I told you I needed it. I had to replace my phone. I spent it in town. Got the new phone, though,
he said happily. Randy pointed a finger at him.
First thing in the morning, we're going into town, and you better hope we can find that cash.
Are you going to arrest me?
Ricky asked.
It was a prank. Just a prank.
Ethan turned away in disgust. Just then, his phone rang. Jude was calling. As always, Jude spoke tersely, but calmly and cohesively. Jonathan Moreau was missing. He ran through the whole story of finding Jenny McPherson in Jonathan's cabin and everything she'd told them. He said Charlie was beside herself, pretty much frantic, but she was safe with Alexi and Clara in the cabin he and Alexi were sharing.
I'm on my way, Ethan said, and I'm still with Laurent. He'll get an APB out.
He turned around and gave Randy Laurent the same information he'd just received.
You! Be here, and be ready to go first thing in the morning,
Randy snapped to Ricky.
Yes, whatever you say, I'll be right here, I swear. But I'm not under arrest?
Ricky asked.
And you're not gonna tell the captain?
Randy didn't answer. He, Ethan, and Thor were already on their way out of the room.
I'll start looking for Moreau on the top deck, Thor said. Jude's already called security, right?
Ethan nodded.
I've got to get to Charlie, he said. No problem. Everyone is in on this, Ethan,
Thor assured him. Randy nodded his agreement and said,
I'll get the ground troops moving.
Ethan turned and headed for the stairs. He had to get to Charlie fast. God knew what she might do if she feared her father was in danger.
I need to change,
Charlie said.
I have to get out of this corset. I need to go back to my cabin.
Jude walked her to her door. then made her stay behind him as he checked out the small room and even smaller bathroom.
All clear,
he said.
I'll be with Alexi and Clara, so you call me when you're ready and I'll come get you. Don't you dare leave here until then, got it?
Got it,
she said, and he left. She locked the door behind him and hurried to strip out of her costume and put on jeans and a pullover. As she slipped the shirt over her head, her phone rang. She grabbed it, hoping it was her father, ready to explain his delay. The caller ID read unknown number, but she answered anyway.
Charlie?
Just her name, and it sounded strange, as if someone was purposely disguising his voice.
Who is this?
The man who has your father.
What?
Charlie sank down on the foot of the bed, her heart racing.
We have your father, and we want to talk to you. You need to ditch the army of feds you travel with. If you ever want to see your father alive again, that is.
I'll do anything, but I have to know what you're talking about. You have him where? What do you want me to do?
It would be stupid, stupid, stupid to do anything this man asked her to, especially ditch the crew, Charlie knew. But this guy and his cohorts had her father. If they got hold of her, too, they could just kill them both. But what else could she do? She had to play for time, keep her father alive.
How do I know you really have my father?
She asked, trying to sound calm and reasonable.
I think you know, but I'll text you proof. You've got an hour to get here.
You're gonna be caught. You know that, right? Murdering someone else isn't gonna help the situation. They will get you.
No, they won't. Once you come and get your father, you'll understand.
She wished she could recognize the voice. She should. Even changed, she should have recognized it.
Besides,
the man continued,
I'm already a murderer, so what difference will one more make? You come, Charlie, or he's dead.
Come where?
She was surprised by the laughter that followed.
I think you'll know where once I text you. And Charlie, if we see a cop, or any one of your FBI buddies, if we see you with anyone else, your daddy's dead. I swear I'll kill him, even if it means I'll be caught. I'll kill him just to get even with you for bringing me down. You got that? I mean it. If I'm going down, he'll go down with me. I hear or see anyone other than you, he's dead.
Then he clicked off, and she was left listening to nothing but the sound of her own breathing. The phone buzzed again almost instantly. She received a picture. It was of her father, and he was tied to the same tombstone she'd been tied to once, long ago, in the unhallowed ground just beyond the Grace Church graveyard. The picture showed Jonathan Moreau, bruised and securely bound, a man standing by his side, his face turned away from the camera. The man held an Enfield rifle, the bayonet fixed, the point of the blade touching her father's chest, just above his heart. 16. Television shows and B-movies were filled with people who behaved irrationally. Teenagers going off alone into the woods where a murderer walked and ending up dead themselves. If she'd ever been asked if she would behave so stupidly, Charlie would have said no, emphatically. In fact, she would have mocked the mere possibility. But she'd never thought about what she would do when someone she loved was threatened. Her father, her whole world for so much of her life. If she survived the night, a big if, Ethan would probably never speak to her again. But she had the picture. They weren't bluffing. They had her father. And once she arrived, they would still have him. The big difference? They would have her, too. But that didn't matter. She had to go. She had to do whatever was in her power to, if not save her father, at least buy time. But if she went to meet them with nothing, she would be entirely at their mercy. She wasn't about to be that foolish. She hesitated, looking at the bedside table where Ethan kept his gun at night. Of course, it wasn't there. Hating herself for doing it, she dug into his travel pack. To her relief, at the very bottom, she found a second weapon in a holster. She thanked God her father had taught her how to shoot. His second gun was a Smith & Wesson bodyguard revolver. She quickly checked that it was loaded, then slipped it into her waistband and threw on a jacket. There was one thing she could do, and she did it. She left the phone on her bed. Ethan would find it. Very carefully, she cracked the door to her cabin. Jude was waiting in the hall.
Hey,
she said.
Sorry, but can you give me another 10 minutes?
Sure. Whatever you need.
Damn, he was going to stay in the hallway.
Tell Alexi and Claire I'm fine, will you? I promise I'll call as soon as I'm ready.
Will do.
She heard his cabin door close. Silently, she slipped out and hurried down the hallway and made her way to the security point where she could exit the ship. There was a man on duty, of course, so she couldn't just glide by unseen. No choice. She produced her journey ID, smiled, and told the guard, who knew her both as her father's daughter and one of the Southern Belles, that she needed something at her house. He smiled and let her through. Easy enough so far. The others would find the picture on her phone, then have no trouble discovering that she'd left the ship, and soon enough they would be behind her. But that was what she'd wanted, right? If she and her father were going to die, at least she was certain the crew would catch their killers. Once off the ship, she panicked. There weren't a lot of cabs around at this hour, and she'd left her phone behind so she couldn't call for one, and the clock was ticking. She hurried to one of the main hotels and had the doorman call her a cab. The driver informed her that it was late and Gracechurch was closed until the morning, but she only thanked him for his concern and said she knew that and it was okay. He left her in front of the church. For a moment she paused, stared up at the facade of the church, so beautiful in the moonlight.
Charlie?
She spun around, her heart in her throat. To her surprise, she saw Barry Seymour on the ground, propped against the fence that went around the graveyard to the church. Blood was dripping down his forehead.
Barry, she cried, what happened to you?
I came out because we lost some props again,
he said.
I stopped here to look at the church, like you just did, and suddenly someone hit me.
She hunkered down, trying to ascertain how badly he'd been injured.
I'm okay, I just need to get out of here.
He paused, looking at her.
I think it was Jimmy, but why?
Jimmy?
She said, disbelieving. Jimmy Smith? Her friend forever and ever?
Are you sure?
She asked.
Barry, let me help you. I have to hurry, they have my father.
Your father? What?
He tried to stand, but fell back, unable to get his feet under him.
I'd help you, but I can't quite get up.
I don't have my cell, Barry. Use yours. Call for help.
He nodded and pulled out his phone.
Why didn't I think of that? Oh, it's my head. I feel so dizzy. Watch out, okay? Watch out for Jimmy.
I will.
She was torn.
I have to find my dad, but are you sure you're all right, until help can get here?
He nodded.
Then I have to go.
She suddenly remembered the callers. Jimmy's warning?
Barry, this is important. Tell them no lights and no sirens. If whoever it is knows they're coming, they'll kill my dad, okay? Do you understand me?
He nodded again, so Charlie left him to call for help and hurried past the graveyard toward unhallowed ground. The trees and foliage grew denser, the shadows deeper, as she went, and she had to slow down, even though everything in her longed to run. Only thin strands of moonlight penetrated the darkness, but she knew where the grave was, knew exactly where to go. She made her way carefully through brush and over tree roots. Then, in the distance, cloaked in shadow, she saw the gravestone and the man bound to it. And from somewhere in the trees, in the shadows, and the darkness, she heard a voice. She recognized it clearly.
Charlie, how good of you to join us.
Ethan knew immediately that something was wrong. Jude was in the hallway, knocking on the door to the cabin Ethan and Charlie had shared.
Charlie, you all right in there?
Ethan stared at him, frowning, and stepped past him, sliding his key into the door. He pushed the door open and stepped inside, looked briefly around the small space, and headed into the bathroom. No Charlie.
I stood out in the hall and watched. I was gone for about 60 seconds when she asked me to tell Claire and Alexi she was fine and just needed a few more minutes. Ethan, she purposely eluded me.
Fear streaked through Ethan like a violent stab of lightning. He wanted to jump on Jude, wanted to shake him. How could he have let Charlie outsmart him like that? But he knew Charlie, too, knew how good an actor she was. She had probably been able to make Jude think she was fine without breaking a sweat. But she would never do anything to put herself into actual danger, not when she had people to protect her, would she?
All right, she eluded you. So now we're looking for Jonathan and Charlie. I'll try her father's cabin, see if she went back there to talk to Jenny McPherson for some reason. Maybe she thinks Jenny was lying and she knows something.
I'll head to the departure checkpoint, see if she's trying to leave the journey, Ethan said.
Call her,
Jude suggested.
You never know.
Ethan pulled out his phone, and just as he finished punching in her number, his caller ID registered an unknown caller. While his phone connected to Charlie's, he answered the incoming call.
Delaney,
he said curtly.
Ethan.
It was a woman's voice, but not Charlie's.
Yes, who is this?
It's Nancy. Nancy Deauville Camp.
Nancy, this isn't a good time.
As he spoke, he heard a soft buzzing sound, a phone vibrating somewhere nearby, in the room.
Ethan, I know, I'm sorry. I'm closing up at Mrs. Mama's, and I just gave a cab driver a last cup of coffee. We should have been closed, but he came just before I locked the door, and I felt sorry for him.
Okay.
Jude had found the ringing phone and held it up. It was Charlie's, and it had been lying on the bed.
Nancy, I have to go.
Sorry. Anyway, the driver just took someone who sounded like Charlie out to Grace Church. He was going on about crazy women wanting to go ghost hunting all alone, and I just wanted to call and make sure everything was okay.
As Nancy finished speaking, Jude showed Ethan Charlie's phone. The last message she'd received was a picture of her father, tied to a tombstone. He barely managed to grunt out a thank you to Nancy before he hung up.
Let's go,
he told Jude. He was already headed out the cabin door. He stopped short the second he stepped out into the hall. Ellsworth Daru was there.
Come on,
he urged Ethan.
Hurry. I'm way ahead of you,
Ethan said softly.
Charlie!
Jonathan said when she reached him at a run.
Charlie, you shouldn't have come. Go run! Please, get out of here!
I can't, Dad,
she said, bending down to study the ropes that bound him to the tombstone. They were tied tight, very tight, but she found an end and started working at the knot, which began to give.
Almost got it, Dad, almost got it,
she murmured. Too late. She heard a rustling, the killers in the bushes behind them, waiting to spring at her. She turned and drew the Smith & Wesson from her waistband, then aimed it at the man coming toward them. She'd known the voice because she knew the man. And it wasn't Jimmy. It was Grant Ferguson, another friend, or so she had thought. He smiled at her. He was in full uniform, as if he'd just finished filming, and he was carrying the Enfield, bayonet attached.
Don't come any near,
she warned.
Why, look at you, Charlie, toting a big, mean gun. I'd never have figured.
Just because I don't particularly like guns doesn't mean I don't respect them and know how to use them,
Charlie said, surprised that her voice was so cool and calm.
Why are you doing this?
Come on, don't play dumb. Your dad here was about to figure it out. And of course you did see me trying to cover up the corpse.
What?
She asked.
You were there. The day we filmed. Right when the ghost army was rising. I saw you look at me. I was shifting dirt around trying to cover up the body more thoroughly. Sooner or later you'd remember what you saw and start wondering what I was doing.
You idiot! She didn't know anything until you just went and told her,
Jonathan said, tugging at the ropes.
None of us had a clue, so why the hell did you have to kill anyone in the first place?
Why? Because those two idiots would have ruined everything,
Grant said.
I argued and argued with Albion, told him he had to leave Gideon Oil alone and not propose that stupid new plan of his. I have money tied up with Gideon Oil and that pipeline. Everything, actually. And if old Saul Gideon had agreed to Sane Energy's proposed change as well, I might have been dead and buried myself before I finally saw a return on my investment. So I got rid of Albion. Okay. In all honesty, I didn't intend to kill him. I lured him out to talk by telling him that we were looking to do some very special filming, and I needed to see him in uniform. So I was in uniform, too. And well, he wouldn't listen, so he had to be dealt with. And I had no choice when old Feral Hickory got suspicious and I had to kill him, too. Such an old fool. Didn't even think to be afraid for himself.
Charlie held the gun steady on him.
Well, now you won't need money. I don't think there's much to buy in prison.
Now who's the idiot? I'm not going to prison, Charlie.
Okay, I'll just shoot you.
No, you won't.
Why not?
Because we were afraid you might try to pull something. Maybe even bring a gun.
We? You're working with Jimmy Smith? And yes, I know about Jimmy because he beat up Barry, but Barry's still alive and he told me.
Barry just pretended Jimmy had beat him up. Barry's fine. In fact, he's quite close, and has been for a few minutes.
He smiled, savoring the information he was about to deliver.
Right now, Barry has a precision rifle aimed at your father. You might want to check for that little red laser dot on your dad's chest.
So you want me to throw down my gun and let you shoot both of us?
Charlie said.
You're not gonna let us go. I never saw a damn thing, but now that you've confessed, you have no choice but to kill us, do you? And what about that poor woman you killed in Baton Rouge, Selma Rodriguez? She didn't deserve to die. She didn't know anything either. And whether you kill us or not, the truth will come out. They're meeting with Saul Gideon tomorrow.
She thought that what she'd said was true. She wasn't sure, but she'd learned from Ethan, sound like you know what you're talking about.
They'll start investigating all the shareholders, and they'll find you. They'll find you and arrest you, and you'll rot in prison. There's no way out.
Charlie, drop the damn gun!
Grant roared furiously.
Shoot, Barry! Just shoot! Shoot the old man first! We'll let Charlie see her dad die.
Don't shoot, Barry. I'm a crack shot, and I will kill Grant,
Charlie said, wondering if she'd managed to talk long enough for help to arrive. Everything depended on how quickly Ethan had found her phone.
I don't give a damn if you shoot Grant. You and your father will still die, and I'll get off scot-free.
I already called in about my injury and blamed it on Jimmy Smith, saying he attacked me. Jimmy will look guilty as all hell of just about everything,
Barry said, pleased with himself.
That'll tie everything up neatly,
he grinned.
Jimmy'll be too dead to protest.
What the fuck?
Grant demanded, spinning around.
You don't care if they shoot me?
Hey,
Barry said.
I was there with you, trying to get those guys to back down. You killed them. I was there.
You were just as involved with the stocks as I was. Bull, you're in this all the way.
Hey, go ahead, Charlie. Yeah, Grant, they should shoot you. Rather you than me. I'm not going down.
Jonathan took that split second to show he'd finished what Charlie had started. He was free. He jumped up, forcing Charlie to the ground as Barry let out a shot. Charlie shifted out from under her father and fired, but she was off balance and her shot went wild. She and her father rolled desperately down a small slope in the old overgrown graveyard, and somehow the Smith and Wesson flew from her grasp. They came to a stop behind an old gravestone and took advantage of what little cover it provided. She looked around, seeking the gun she'd lost, but it was too dark and she couldn't see where it had landed.
Get up, but stay low,
her father whispered.
Head for the trees and hide.
The gun,
she began.
No time, Charlie, just run.
She rose, but remained hunched low behind the stone. Shots rang out, but their pursuers seemed to be firing in the wrong direction.
Where the hell are they?
Barry roared into the night.
Run, Charlie! Run hard!
Jonathan urged.
Dad, you...
I'll be right behind you!
Charlie ran. She heard another shot and an explosion as a nearby gravestone burst into fragments. Either Grant and Barry had gotten lucky, or they had figured out where she and her father had gone. So she ran hard into the trees. She heard Grant and Barry thrashing through the trees and brush behind her, close, so close. A mist seemed to be rising. She was lost, no idea anymore where she should run. But she could hear Barry and Grant coming up behind her, close, so close. More shots, but she didn't hear her father scream and had to believe he was still safe, still running. The mist was growing thicker. Charlie slammed into a tree so hard she was momentarily stunned. She staggered back and fell, then pushed herself up, trying to rise. And then she saw them. It was exactly as it had been when they were filming. Except now it was real. They rose from the earth one by one. Spectral shapes that slowly populated the high bluff where the church had long held dominion over the landscape. If she blinked, they might have been a part of the mist, they were so ethereal. And then, as she watched with eyes wide open, they became what they really were. Ghostly soldiers, rising from their graves, worn, war-weary, dirty, sweaty, and exhausted, yet ready to fight for what they believed was right. Here in this narrow strip of Louisiana between Baton Rouge and Fort Hudson, the Civil War had one day come to a halt, and as a result, the men who rose from the earth wore both the tattered butternut and gray of the South and Union blue. They'd been good men in life, and they rose together now, ready to fight shoulder to shoulder. For at a time when the nation had been torn apart in tragic conflict, they had found, for a few brief moments, peace and friendship. They were a ghost army, ragged and unearthly, chilling and terrifying in the night, shadows of vengeance marching in the moonlight. They moved slowly in otherworldly splendor, spectral shapes, faces hardened, joined together to protect the innocent and destroy evil. Someone flesh and blood burst through the trees, Barry Seymour, wielding his rifle. He started to aim it at Charlie when one of the ghosts stepped in front of him. It was Captain Anson McKee, Confederate States Cavalry. Barry looked at him and screamed, staggering back, but he still had the gun and he tried to fire at the apparition before him. Bullets glanced off trees, and he cried out,
"I'll kill you, Charlie! So help me God, I'll kill you!"
There was a sudden hard thrashing through the trees, and then another voice rang out, strong, furious. Ethan.
"Not in this lifetime you won't, asshole!"
He fired a warning shot over Barry's head and shouted,
"Drop the gun!"
Barry fired wildly again. Ethan fired once more, this time hitting Barry in the arm that held the gun. Barry screeched and fell to the dirt. Ethan strode over to him, ignoring the man's wails, and secured the weapon.
"Ethan, be careful!"
Charlie called as he came to her.
"Grant Ferguson is still out there somewhere close. I don't know if it works or not, but he has an old Enfield."
As she spoke, Grant came bursting through the trees, the Enfield aimed at them. But Ethan turned on a dime and fired, and Grant went down just like Barry had, howling in pain. Ethan went over and claimed that weapon, too. Then he returned to Charlie, giving her a hand and drawing her to her feet. He pulled her into his arms, and for a moment, she just stood there, shaking, grateful for his warmth and glad of his strength. Then she pulled away from him and said,
"My father."
"It's fine," Jude called, walking over to join them, with her father leaning heavily against him. Charlie let out a glad cry and rushed into her father's arms.
"Charlie, Charlie, Charlie, you shouldn't have come for me."
He stopped speaking and just held her. Then suddenly he pulled back, and she realized he was staring over her shoulder. She turned to see what he was looking at. They were still there, tattered, weary soldiers, Union and Confederate, watching. Captain Anson McKee was there, and Ellsworth DeRue stood at his cousin's side. As one, they lifted their hands and saluted. Ethan and Jude saluted in return. As Charlie watched, her father smiled in wonder and saluted the men as well. Then the soldiers drifted away to become part of the mist. Anson and Ellsworth were the last to disappear. The distant sound of sirens reached them, faint at first, but growing louder. Charlie began to shake. It was over. And yet, she felt strangely that her life was just beginning. Northern Virginia was going to be wonderful. Working with Alexei and Claire again would be great. But most of all, life with Ethan would be everything she wanted. This is Luke Daniels. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Darkest Journey by Heather Graham. This program was produced by Common Mode. Paul Fowley, Technical Director. Executive Producer Suzanne Mitchell. Text copyright 2016 by Heather Graham Possessory. Production copyright 2016 by Harlequin Enterprises Limited. Used under license with Harlequin Books, S.A. All rights reserved. Thank you for listening.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program. Hopes you have enjoyed this program.